Defense, Professor Azeredu Lopes, the Vice President of our Parliament. This is Terezo Caeiro, my dear friend. Thank you for being here, representing on behalf of the President of the Republic, the Deputy Secretary General of NATO, His Excellency Ambassador Alexander Vershov, on behalf of the Committee of National Defense of the Portuguese Parliament, we wish to express our gratitude for being present at this conference here in Lisbon. Probably it will be possible, you can make a projection in anticipation of some of the topics to be discussed in the next NATO forthcoming next meeting in Warsaw in the framework of the Warsaw Summit. And to would like also to greet His Excellency the Ambassador Luiz Almeida Sampaio, our ambassador to NATO, and to thank him for his effort to make possible this presence of the Deputy NATO Secretary General. I would like also to thank Mr. Julio Miranda Calha for his work in the organization of this event. I would like also to present my greetings to His Excellencies, the ambassadors accredited in Lisbon, to the military attachés, and also I would like to greet the general, our chief of staff, general chief of staff. This conference is a first step of reflection on the collective future to which we'll have to which we'll be confronted in terms of security and defense. The members of Parliament of the Defense Committee are following very closely the international geopolitical situation and have here the presence of the coordinator of the parliamentary group of the Socialist Group and also of the CDS and PSD groups. We have here two former defense ministers here, and this shows the interest that this topic has for the Portuguese Parliament and for all those who follow the affairs of collective security. I just wanted to extend you a very warm welcome. This is the second conference held organized by the Defense Committee. We had already organized a meeting on the role of the European Union in the framework of common defense and security, and the second conference will be another contribution to the role of the Committee of National Defense in to form an opinion, a public opinion duly informed on these matters connected to defense and security. I would like to extend you a very warm welcome and to
Mas seguramente.
This will not be the last conference we will organize, but probably the most important. And this is why I would like to give the floor to the Ambassador Luiz Almeida Sampaio. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente.
Thank you very much, President. I would like to greet, first of all, the Vice Speaker of the Assembly of the Republic, Teresa Cairo, my friend, and the Minister of Defense, National Defense, my friend, and Deputy SGM of NATO, MPs, ambassadors, ladies and gentlemen, all protocol observed. I have very few time because the main speakers are following, so I'm not going to take time nor do a long speech. So I wonder what in 10 minutes the Portuguese ambassador to NATO in the scope of an occasion as this one. So what I wish to share with you, let's say very briefly and short words, so what is my main action on a daily basis as a representative of Portugal to the Organization of the North Atlantic Treaty. I'm living in different NATO as the previous ones, NATO 1.0 from the outset and the collapse of the Wall of Berlin, and nowadays NATO 2.0 following the collapse of the Berlin War and all the settings we are living in, and nowadays from now on the new challenges mainly after the annexation and Crimea and all that happened in Ukraine and what is happening in the southern borders. And NATO has eventually not the tools as appropriate as it has for other challenges and other situations. This is the NATO 3.0. But nevertheless, there is something that remains in this NATO 3.0 and represents probably the main point of this Atlantic Alliance. And this is precisely the transatlantic link. NATO is the house of this relation. And when we leave this in this organization, we leave this link, this relationship day after day. NATO is the base, the home base of the transatlantic relation, the dialogue between the two shores of the Atlantic, Europe and Canada and the United States on the other side of the Atlantic. So NATO is essential in a world where order is not anymore the reality. And in that sense, it is more important than ever on a responsible basis, on a very clear basis. So it is essential for us to have a very responsible attitude towards a world so imprevisible. So following the instructions of the government of Portugal, day after day, I repeat inside NATO that our relationship with Russia is a relationship that imposes firmness and dialogue. And I also say, as a representative of the country I represent, a country in the south of Europe, that we have to focus more and more in the vast summit, but behind, we also have to concentrate on all that happens on the southern border of Europe. Our views in NATO are respected and listened because we have a solidarity attitude, even though when financially we have constraints. We had our ships in the Baltic Sea. Yeah, we are also doing surveillance, air surveillance in the Baltic. We have forces deployed here and there, and we have an excellent attitude. Portuguese, say that we are an example of the attitude of NATO 360 degrees around. Thank you very much. The Deputy Speaker of the Assembly of Republic has the floor. Good morning, Mr. Minister of National Defense, Mr. Deputy Secretary General of NATO, Mr. Vice Chairman of the Committee of National Defense of the Parliament. And thank you for this initiative, co-organized with Mr. Miranda Calha. And this has been very important for this debate to take place. Mr. Chief of Staff, General Chief of Staff, and all the official general represented. Mr. Ambassador of Portugal to NATO, it is always a pleasure to see you and listen to you, MPs, members of the diplomatic corps, speakers, invitees, ladies and gentlemen. At the outset, I would like to, in representation of Mr. Speaker of the Parliament, I would like to greet all the presents, either from NATO or the Secretariat of the organization that answered positively to realize this meeting in Lisbon to assess and examine the future perspectives of the forthcoming summit in Warsaw. I would like to share with you the thanks of our Parliament. This opportunity is a unique opportunity to enlarge horizons and to assess several points in this scope. I believe that our sense of mission will be strengthened through this exercise today.
On the 8th and 9th of July, Warsaw will host the heads of state of government of the NATO member countries, which cover the area from Bancorpa to Cappadocia, and other states with different states are associated to NATO. The Warsaw Summit will be held at a crucial moment, as it has been said already, for the alliance, because the tectonic plates of the Euro-Atlantic plates have shifted to the east and also to the south. NATO is now undergoing the biggest strengthening since the end of the war. We see in Poland how we can readjust to the new security and strategic environment in order to be able to defend the Allies against any threat. We know the background. It is very complex indeed. What makes this summit different from the last one we held in Wales in 2014 is the growing aggravation of the international situation and the pressure on the West to cope with the situation. Today, the world has become more dangerous and uncertain than it was 2 years ago, and we don't need to be very much informed to understand this. All the citizens, and not only people with the high knowledge of international affairs, are aware of this. The common citizen feels that. So now, this terrorism now is a threat in the European space, and it has created the largest refugee crisis since the Second World War. Iraq, Syria and Libya have become permanent sources of instability and also foci of jihadist terrorism and opposition to democracy. At the East, the Minsk agreements have a long way to go in order to implement their objectives. In another dimension, the cyber attacks do not give any halt to the Allied services, and they put their hence the our society is permanently under risk. NATO wishes to be a structuring basis in definition of the architecture of international security. The Warsaw Summit can mark a new cycle marked by a new credible alliance in the promotion of and guarantee of peace and security. These values will be the great Euro-Atlantic space, but also in all neighboring regions. And Portugal, as a founding member of NATO, continues, as always, committed to participate with will and dynamism to the alliance. I would like to remind you that during one of the most serious crises of its history, Portugal was not indifferent to the change of the international situation. It also followed the new demands in international security. It has accomplished all the missions of the detached forces and all its commitment to NATO. At the beginning of this year, the NATO annual report for 2015 was published, and Portugal appears in the group of the 16 countries whose defense expenditures have increased compared to the previous year and close to the commitment assumed in Wales, 2% of the budget for defense. And remember, there will be the reassertion of the commitment in Warsaw. I'll conclude my speech saying that the Warsaw Summit must also define its missions and to reassess a new task to maintain international stability. And I believe and I'm certain that NATO will continue to be an indispensable reference of the international security architecture. Thank you very much. I wish you a very good day of work. Thank you for your attention. I give the floor to the Minister of Defence, Mr. Azeredo Lopes. Mr. Vice President of the Parliament, Mrs. Teresa Caena. Mr. Marc Antonio Costa, President of the National Defense Committee, Dr. Miranda Cala, Your Excellency Luisa Maria Sampaio, Portuguese Ambassador to NATO, the Chief of Staff of our Armed Forces, Your Excellency the Ambassador Axel and Verschow, NATO Deputy Secretary General, ambassadors, and dear guests. I would like to greet this initiative and to thank the President of the Defense Committee and especially the Vice President of our Parliament, who is sharing now our reflection on this topic in a day which is very important for the future of Europe and to which NATO is very much linked. And I would like to consider that the Assembly of the Republic as the most democratic forum of the expression of ideas and debate. Let me now mention the genesis and the evolution of the Atlantic Alliance to make a prospective approach of the issues and also few notes of NATO for the future from a Portuguese point of view. And I'm sure that the advice given by Professor Adrian Moreno, according to which if I wanted to make some forecasts in order not after my death for, so that nobody could accuse me of failing. So, in fact, it's a double task. NATO had to assume collective defense after the First World War, the threat from the East, and it was also committed to the internal pacification of Europe, so the United States to become a European power. This was the so-called transatlantic house. During the Cold War, it was the combination of the consolidation of European democracies with the American capacity of dissuasion, which ensured the contention of the Soviet Union. And let's be frank, it had ensured peace in Europe. At the end of the Cold War, the Atlantic Alliance was also very important for the unification of Germany and guaranteed also regional peace. Although many had forecast the end of the alliance, its members decided that the organization should continue to be responsible for European defense, and it extended its perimeter and integrated the so-called post-communist democracies. But if collective defense based on the transatlantic security enshrined in the Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, it is a main raison d'etre of NATO. It was the organization which underwent a dramatic change. It showed a new dynamic to which needed adjustment. The Allied had to deal with crises outside the perimeter of NATO, and also this, for instance, in the space of the Balkans, it opened intense internal debates, especially during the Ukrainian crisis, on the refounding of the alliance responsibilities. This debate has opposed those who stand for a regional or Euro-Atlantic alliance to those in favor of a global NATO. And both should be compatible against one. Since NATO became a manager of crisis from Afghanistan to piracy in Aden, and also the occupation of Crimea has resuscitated from the Allies a return to the classical objectives of the alliance, and to continue the strategic ties of the United States to the to old Europe. And this purpose was almost abandoned. But now it is indispensable. Despite the recent development, the world of the Soviet Union and the neighboring regions is not coming back. Let's be frank. And I quote Mark Twain, Russia cannot be compared to the Soviet Union. And to compare Russia to the former Soviet Union is, of course, exaggerated. The Atlantic Alliance has been called to cope with a set of diffuse threats. Then there will be an effective dissuasion to neutralize the networks of terrorists in the Middle East, and also whose effect are felt in Allied territory and its enlarged neighborhood, to abolish virtual communications. So the revision of the Security Council had examined these issues to include the nuclear security and also cyber security. So in 2010, at the Lisbon summit, a set of strategic concept was reformulated, focused on one objective. The alliance has the due and the will to address three tasks: collective defense, with in a more or less framework of reinterpretation of the Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, management of crisis, and cooperative security. Now, crisis management, thanks to the enlarged capacity of NATO, and cooperative security because it demands the development of partnerships, not only with non-member countries, but also with other international organizations. NATO can and should contribute to the control of arms, non-proliferation, and disarmament. The strategic concept of 2010 was a clear and firm statement on the tasks and fundamental principles of NATO, on its values, on the changes in the framework of security and the strategic aims of in terms of security for this decade. But now we are already over the first half of this decade. We should also remember that there was an aggravation of the risk due to the increase of transnational terrorism with an alliance conceived to address symmetrical conflict has to adapt to new hybrid threats. It has to leave its own comfort zone, in which the most traditional answer is the easiest and most comfortable one, to address challenges and to cope with hybrid threats and global threats from the South. This is why we need a rethinking of a reassessment of the organization, since there is a resurge of threat from the East. Then we'll have to show our determination. We have to be firm in the defense of the status quo of the post-Cold War, the territorial integrity of Ukraine, for instance, and also the destabilization of southern areas impose a new reflection on new areas of action, so that it can become useful faced to new emerging threats, proliferation of mass destruction weapons, and to guarantee air and security, security. The threat to the southern flank is not really a real southern flank. It is a geographical representation of a global threat which has its main origins in the south. We must think about the future NATO at the east, but also in the south, maybe in a perspective of 360 degrees, to define its areas of action, to guarantee regional peace, and also to guarantee for our citizens the full their fundamental rights. We must not leave aside the two dimensions that I mentioned: crisis management and also collective security. And for the summit, now I'll talk about Warsaw and think about the threat in the east and southeast of the alliance, the main expectation is that the message of firmness and disillusion of the organization can produce an agreement to address the threat and felt by our eastern allies, Poland, Bulgaria, the Baltic countries, and Romania. Portugal will continue to stand for balance and ponderation, and the language to Russia must be constructive. We should never close our doors to a dialogue with Moscow. We must promote a dialogue with Russia because it is extremely important to balance the other answers to the other aspects of the crisis. But also Portugal won't forget the global flank in the south, and it has worked with France, Spain and Italy, and they have sent a joint letter to the Secretary General. This was released in the last NATO summit in order to prepare the summit in the area of cyber security. We are waiting for constructing result. The definitive construction of cyberspace as an operational field or as a new theater of operations, apart from air, land and sea, in a context where can be conducted preventive or reactive actions, is extremely important in order to enable the alliance and the member countries to guarantee security. Now, we have to find a framework for this new theater of operations and this new operational domain in the very much in the classic sphere of Article 5 of the Washington Treaty. Yes. Today we have in the NATO school, a school of information. It will include also a school of training for cyber security. This is funded 100% by the alliance, and it represents an investment which is far more than 20 million of euros. To the command of fight for NATO and other operation structures have been created which promote the pluriculturalism and will enable a more intense exchange at the operational and academic and international exchange with all the economic advantages and development advantages which I deem to be necessary. I would like to leave you a message of careful optimism. We must not miss this opportunity to issue a solid statement from NATO and from the EU. We have to strengthen at political and institutional level the need to strengthen complementarity and not the duplications of means and methods between the two organizations without abdicating from the autonomy of decision and the different of scope of each organization. The need to strengthen the division of tasks between the EU and NATO, since now it has a common policy of defense of security, which is not yet fully operation. We need more implementation to this plan. I would like to refer to three fields apart that of the decision which were more approved by Portugal. The implementation of joint exercises in the following domains: hybrid threats, sea security, and I remember the success of cooperation in the Aegean Sea, and now in the Central Mediterranean, it is a natural stage. I remember also, if we would need a diagnosis, we had recently the resolution of 2092 of the Security Council, reminding us of the growing concern caused by the presence of Daesh and the problems in Libya, and also to determine an embargo of the arms to Libya. So now we have the basis to think about a solid articulation between the of EU and the active endeavour of NATO to form a joint answer. And finally, the cyber defence. It is also now the occasion to take advantage of the possibilities of training in this area. The summit will take place in Warsaw in 2 weeks. Now this is the eve of the Night of St. John. And today there is a referendum in the United Kingdom, which, whatever its result, will be a challenge to the resilience of Europe as a whole. And I would like to end my speech by repeating that it is crucial for the Atlantic Alliance to answer these issues, to address these issues of security, because this is going to define the place and the extent of its future actions. Thank you very much.
Na sequência dos...
Now, I would like also to take the opportunity to greet everybody present, starting by the members of Parliament who participate to our conference, and also all our guests, starting by the General Chief of Staff, and also we would like to greet all the officers and chiefs of staffs participating to this conference, and also I'm pleased to see here so many diplomats who participate to this conference. This is a very important meeting. Now I'm going to... There's going to be the speech of the Deputy, the NATO Deputy Secretary General is going to take the floor. I just wanted to thank the President of the National Defense Committee, Dr. Marco Antonio Costa, for organizing this conference, and also to for having organizing the previous conference related to essential topics of the political agenda, the establishment of a global agenda in the EU. Two very important conferences in the which have linked to defense and foreign policy, and also internal policy. I would like to thank the presence of the Vice President of Parliament, Mrs. Teresa Caiena, who is also here. I would like also to thank her for her speech and her comments on such relevant topics which are going to be debated here. I would like also to thank His Excellency, the Minister of National Defense, who has given us a presentation on the main issues which will be discussed in Warsaw at the NATO summit. So it is one this is what we are now reflecting on these issues in our parliament, because we want to follow what is the development of our defense policy in these matters. So I would like to thank the Minister of National Defense, and also a few words to the Ambassador of Portugal to NATO, His Excellency Luís Almeida Sampaio. I would like to say that he's played a very important role in helping to organize this event. Also, we have, thanks to him, we have His Excellency Ambassador Alexander Fairspoor here. And also, I would like to thank the Ambassador for his support and collaboration. Now, we're going to listen to Ambassador Fairspoor. I know the ambassador quite well because he participates to the Parliamentary Assembly of NATO. We recently met in Tirana, the capital of Albania. Albania, who now is part of the Atlantic Alliance, where the Ambassador made a presentation on the great challenges to the alliance in the future. CV of the ambassador has been distributed. He's now the NATO Deputy Secretary General, and he has held very important post as a diplomat in the diplomatic service of the United States, and he has also been served as ambassador to NATO from 1998 to 2009, to the Russian Federation from 2001 to 2005. He was also ambassador to the Republic of Korea, and he's held numerous senior positions related to the National Security Council. It is a long and brilliant career, but the most important of all is to listen to the presentation of Ambassador Fairspoor, and then we'll be able to ask some questions to him. Thank you very much for coming here to our Parliament, Ambassador, and the floor is yours.
Good morning. Mr. Minister Azevedo Lopes, Madam Vice Speaker Carreiro, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, first let me thank the chairman of the National Defense Committee, Marco Antonio Costa, for his invitation to this conference, and thanks to the whole committee of the Parliament for organizing today's conference, and especially to the moderator of this session, my friend Vice Chairman Julio Miranda Calha. And let me say what a great pleasure it is to be back in Lisbon. Not least because this happens to be the only NATO capital from which I can look out across the ocean and almost see my hometown of Boston, Massachusetts, where there's still a strong and lively Portuguese colony who were all glued to their televisions yesterday. For me, that's symbolic of our close transatlantic bond and of Portugal's unique and longstanding contribution to that bond over many decades. Your contribution continues today through Portugal's membership of the North Atlantic Alliance and its participation in NATO operations. Portuguese soldiers have served under the NATO flag in Afghanistan as part of the ISAF and Resolute Support missions. Last year, Portuguese sailors led NATO's Standing Maritime Group. And as I speak, Portuguese F-16 pilots are deployed as part of NATO's Baltic Air Policing mission, helping to keep our borders secure and our citizens safe. The Portuguese delegation at NATO headquarters in Brussels is playing an important role too, and I want to thank Ambassador Luis de Almeida Sampaio and his team for helping the alliance address the challenges that we face to the south, especially the maritime dimension of those challenges. The truth is that we need to do everything we can to understand and respond to the changing world we live in. That's NATO's day-to-day business. It's the objective of the upcoming summit in Warsaw, and it's what I intend to explore here today. Now, ladies and gentlemen, NATO has helped to keep the peace in Europe for almost seven decades. Our values of democracy, liberty, human rights, and the rule of law have become Europe's common values. Our achievements, in parallel with those of the European Union, are arguably unprecedented in history. But there is a great deal more to do. The challenges we face, including a more assertive and unpredictable Russia, and an arc of instability across the Middle East and North Africa, are truly daunting. Combined with international terrorism, missile proliferation, and the threat of cyber attacks, they add up to a grave and unpredictable security environment, the most challenging situation NATO has faced since the height of the Cold War. Now, the alliance, of course, is alert to these evolving challenges, and we are adapting with great urgency, as Minister Azevedo Lopes stressed. In the first instance, we're doing everything we can to secure our collective defense. That was the impulse behind the Readiness Action Plan, agreed by our leaders at the Wales Summit 2 years ago, as our immediate response to the new security environment. And as part of the RAP, as we call it, we have tripled the size of the NATO Response Force to more than 40,000 troops. We've established a rapid reaction spearhead force within the NATO Response Force, capable of moving within 48 hours. We have created a series of small headquarters in the east of the alliance to aid with planning, logistics, and, should they be required, reinforcements. We have pre-positioned more supplies and equipment, and we have cleared bureaucratic and legal hurdles so that our troops can move swiftly through Allied territory and across Allied borders. So these measures provide a solid foundation for a stronger defense and deterrence posture. But we now know that even more far-reaching measures are needed, since the challenges we face from the East and the South will be with us for a long time. That's why in February our defense ministers approved the idea of an enhanced forward presence in the eastern part of our alliance. Last week, the ministers agreed that this enhanced presence should comprise, on a rotational basis, four multinational battalions in the three Baltic states and in Poland. This will send a strong signal that an attack against any NATO ally will be considered an attack against all. And I expect that the details of the deployment of these battalions, the who and the where, to be decided in Warsaw 2 weeks from now. Now, of course, none of these measures would have been necessary were it not for Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea and its ongoing aggression in eastern Ukraine. And a clear illustration of how dramatically things have changed is to just look back at the NATO summit held here in Lisbon in 2010, a summit attended by Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, at which Russia agreed to cooperate with NATO on ballistic missile defense, and a summit following which, in the official communique, allies declared that, and I quote, "In the light of common security interests, we are determined to build a lasting and inclusive peace together with Russia in the Euro-Atlantic area." 4 years later, Russia illegally annexed Crimea. Now, let me stress that the alliance still believes in working with Russia to build a lasting peace in Europe, as we called for in Lisbon 6 years ago. But in truth, we are a very long way from that goal. And the reason is simple. Moscow's actions represent grave violations of international law. They have undermined the post-war European security order, an order which Russia itself helped to create, starting with the UN Charter and the Helsinki Final Act. Russia has made it very clear that it wants to go back to a divided Europe based on spheres of influence and the domination of its neighbors, rather than respect for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of all other European states. Russia has also used tactics such as subversion and cyber attacks to probe NATO's readiness, and it has shown a reckless willingness to ramp up its nuclear rhetoric and posture. All of this is justified by a carefully crafted but false narrative that claims that NATO's objective is to weaken or encircle Russia. Now, in response to these escalatory and irresponsible steps, NATO has been very clear. We do not seek confrontation with Russia. We do not seek a new Cold War, and we do not seek an arms race. The two-track strategy we've adopted is one of defense and dialogue. We will not be intimidated nor neglect our responsibility to defend our citizens and our territory. But neither will we shut down channels of communication. We will persist in our efforts to engage Russia in meaningful dialogue in order to communicate our resolve, explain our actions, and minimize the risk of an accident or misunderstanding leading to a dangerous escalation. And in this regard, I am hopeful that we'll hold another meeting of the NATO-Russia Council in the next few weeks. We will also use those channels to explain that while partnership remains our long-term goal, there cannot be any return to business as usual until Russia comes back into compliance with international law. That means ending its occupation of Crimea, ending its direct military support for the illegal insurgency in eastern Ukraine, and fully implementing the Minsk agreements. So, when it comes to defense and deterrence, Russia looms large on NATO's agenda. But of course, threats can come from any direction. And as an alliance, we must maintain an all-around 360-degree perspective. That includes our approach to the maritime domain, on which Portugal has been very influential. NATO's maritime capabilities are essential. They are a key element in our ability to deter aggression, and they are integral to our ability, for example, to offer assurance measures to allies and partners and to develop situational understanding and awareness. The alliance must also maintain the ability to preserve and protect freedom of navigation, including the crucial sea lanes in the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea. That has also been the objective, of course, behind NATO's anti-piracy mission off the coast of Somalia, in which Portugal has played an important part. There's still work to be done, for instance, to ensure proper resourcing of the maritime component of the NATO spearhead force. But we are refining and reinforcing our presence in the Baltic Sea and the Black Sea, and we're exploring a greater maritime for NATO in the Mediterranean Sea, including in support of the European Union's Operation Sophia. So for all those reasons, and thanks in part to your country's strong advocacy, maritime security remains high on NATO's agenda and will receive the attention it deserves at the upcoming summit. Now, that's important not just because it enhances our defense and deterrence, but also because it helps us to project stability in our neighborhood, which is the second major theme of the Warsaw Summit, alongside defense and deterrence. Now, in 2010, even before the start of the Arab Spring and the Syrian Civil War, the Lisbon Summit communique described how instability or conflict beyond NATO's borders can directly threaten alliance security, including by fostering extremism, terrorism, and transnational illegal activities such as trafficking in arms, narcotics, and people. That's a quote. It was fairly forward-looking. Now, today we know that to be truer than ever. The situation in the Middle East and North Africa is a strategic concern we cannot ignore. States at risk of failure, ungoverned spaces where terrorist groups are free to go about their bloody business, the greatest refugee and migrant crisis since the Second World War. At the same time, we must do everything we can to bring stability to our eastern flank, assisting partners like Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova with reform and capacity building. NATO security depends on having a stable neighborhood. In fact, defending our own borders is as much about projecting stability beyond those borders as about defending ourselves. They're two sides of the same coin. Now, of course, projecting stability is something NATO has been doing for many years. It began in earnest with the Partnership for Peace in the 1990s, as we helped our Central and East European neighbors reform their security sectors and transform their armed forces, enabling 12 of them, and soon 13, with the entry of Montenegro, to become NATO members. Through our experiences in Afghanistan and Kosovo, we have acquired enormous expertise in fighting terrorism and stabilizing post-conflict situations. And we continue to apply that experience where we can. In particular, we are applying what we've learned from our many different Middle Eastern partnerships, partnership initiatives over the last years, such as our Mediterranean Dialogue Program, involving Algeria, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Mauritania, Morocco, and Tunisia, and the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative, in which Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates participate. Now, importantly, our work in this area is governed by a number of key principles. What we do is part of our all-round 360-degree approach to security. It seeks to complement and not duplicate efforts being made by others, including international organizations like the United Nations and the European Union. It's part of a sustainable long-term approach, and it makes efficient and appropriate use of limited resources. In essence, we seek to make the most of the tools at NATO's disposal while taking care not to overstretch or overreach. Now, we're already training Iraqi officers in Jordan, and following a request from Prime Minister al-Abadi, we're considering whether to expand that training program into Iraq itself, where we had a large NATO training mission up until 2011. That decision, I expect, will be taken at the summit. We're helping Tunisia on counterterrorism, special operations training, and border security. We're supporting Jordan on cyber defense and training to counter improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. We're also, for example, considering how the alliance can provide direct support to the coalition, including the potential use of NATO AWACS surveillance planes. And we stand ready to support the Libyan government of national accord with the building of its defense institutions if we get a request. There's also an opportunity here to support the development of our partners' maritime capabilities, something Portugal has championed. Our support can enhance partners' maritime interdiction operations, their counterterrorism efforts, and their ability to provide humanitarian assistance. It would also improve our own situational awareness, for example, in the southern Mediterranean, by working with our partners, navies and coast guards. So, NATO is already doing a great deal to project stability. But as we look toward the Warsaw Summit and beyond, I believe we can and we must do more. Our security and our credibility require it. Now, a third key objective of the Warsaw Summit, and it relates to everything I've already discussed, will be to expand cooperation between NATO and the European Union. Ties between the two organizations are becoming stronger and stronger, and I expect EU leaders and the NATO Secretary General to make a joint statement on the margins of the summit in Warsaw, calling for those bonds to be tightened even further. Our common security demands greater cooperation in areas such as countering hybrid threats, cyber defense, and maritime security. Now, the final issue I want to address today is the importance of making the necessary investments to keep our alliance strong. If NATO is to do its job, and if we're to achieve all that we know that we can achieve, then we cannot afford to be complacent. We need the right levels of funding and the right equipment and technology. At our last summit in Wales, all allies committed to halting the cuts in defense spending and gradually increasing it to 2% of GDP within a decade. 2 years on, that pledge remains essential to the long-term health of our alliance and the security it provides. In the case of Portugal, defense spending last year was 1.33% of GDP, a 3.6% increase over 2014. So that upward trend is encouraging, but it's crucial that the trend be maintained. And I'm looking at the minister, who knows what I'm talking about. Those five allies who already meet the 2% goal are understandably very vocal about others doing the same. And it's not just about spending more. We have to spend better. We must ensure we have the modern equipment we need. 8.7% of Portugal's defense spending last year was on major equipment. But the NATO guideline is 20%. So that's another one where we hope to see an upward trend. And allies must identify and remedy shortfalls in their capabilities. In Portugal's case, for instance, I encourage you to look hard at how you can expand training for air crews, better retain skilled pilots, develop more high readiness forces, and ensure that the forces have the necessary stores, spares, and ammunition. So, ladies and gentlemen, back in 2010, the Lisbon Summit Declaration spoke of the need for NATO to, quote, remain an essential source of stability in an uncertain and unpredictable world. That imperative is as strong today as ever. We face the most complex and challenging security environment since the end of the Cold War, or since the height of the Cold War. But together, the alliance is responding, strengthening our collective defense and deterrence, and projecting stability in our wider neighborhood. 2 weeks from now, we'll take decisions which will guide our future direction. With Portugal at the table, I have every confidence that we will get those decisions right and ensure that NATO remains the essential source of stability that we all very much need it to be. So thank you very much for listening. I look forward to answering your questions. Thanks very much.
So, Ambassador is available to answer questions. I would like to know who wishes to put questions to the keynote speaker. I have here that of people, and I'll start with Mr. Antoine Figueiredo-Lopes, member of Eurodefense, a former Minister of Defense. You have the floor. Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to put two questions. After greeting this initiative of launching this debate in Parliament, we know that the Warsaw Summit can be summarized by two key words, defense and deterrence. So we have a set of components and factors which may us remind to a coming back to the Cold War, not NATO 1.0, but something similar, with positioning of troops, with strengthening of equipment, with well-defined borderlines. And my first question is to know whether this emphasis, which is going to be decided by the summit on military capacities, is not in a way in contradiction with what is the perception of the Europeans on their concerns in terms of security. Recently, a survey made in most European countries of the EU, covering 15,000 people who were interviewed, has shown that in countries like France, Spain, and other countries, 90% of the citizens consider that the main threat to their security is terrorism. So more than half of those who were interviewed more than half of these 550 European citizens, in fact, consider that one of the most serious threats to security in Europe is the refugee crisis and the migrant crisis, which has not been correctly sorted out. And the answer is, would it not be preferable to put more emphasis on the need to convey to a NATO 3.0 to strengthen more forces, and the need to conjugate more forces among all the structures which constitute the defense and collective defense of Europe, and it's not only NATO. So there's going to be two more questions, one by Mr. Kaj Basala from the Institute of National Defense. Thank you very much. My question has to do with the relationship with Russia. I think that the threat has to do with terrorism, which is caused by the IS threats and terrorism. I think that the right way to address this issue is to cooperate with Russia, and the revolutions taken 2 years ago in Wales showed this. I think that in Warsaw everything indicates there's going to be more divide between the two organizations. So my question is this: how can we find the right way in this conflict if the relationship with Russia remains cut? Another question from the MP Vitalino Kanish, also member of our parliamentary committee to NATO. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I have four questions. First of all, I wanted to underline the what has been said by Ambassador Felcher said about NATO, rule of law, rights, human rights, democracy. These are the values which have united us and which have united us in collective defense, and which has prepared us if we will be involved in a fight. And we think that in various member countries of NATO, we find out trends which go against these values. There are some NATO countries where there is a lot of attacks against the human rights with authoritarian tendencies. How can NATO cope with this and maintain its cohesion if there is an increase of these trends? the environment of Cold War, the rhetoric of Cold War that we can notice in some meetings, in some thresholds of NATO, and I've been to many meetings at the Parliamentary Assembly of NATO. Of course, this is not this speech of the Cold War, this environment of Cold War continues. There will be a divorce between Portuguese public opinion and NATO, referring the relationships with Russia. We have to be sensible in this. You, Ambassador, you said that you wanted to reactivate the partnership, the partnership Portugal Russia. What are the steps which can be taken? Is it possible? Mention the possibility to replicate the operation, humanitarian operation, it was made, and the agency, is it possible to replicate it in the south of the Mediterranean? I would like to know what are the perspectives. What about Brexit? There is a referendum today in the United Kingdom. I would like to mention two important aspects. The eventual exit of the UK from the European Union, and the threat to a common policy of security and defence. UK is was an essential member to this future policy. The eventual exit of UK would mean that a partner who would cease to be a partner of EU, and what about the membership of NATO? Well, I give the floor to Ambassador Vershbo.
A lot more than three questions. But let me try to go back to the first. First of all, I would insist that we are not calling for a return to the Cold War. We are not trying to do things in our actions that would return us to the Cold War. But at the same time, we have to be realistic about the fundamental change in the security environment. Russia has annexed someone else's territory by force. This is an act of aggression. It violates so many agreements, I can't count them, that Russia itself signed and even drafted those agreements. And day after day, 2 years later, there's more aggression taking place in eastern Ukraine. There's between 35 and 40,000 troops there. Some of them are local, but most of them are Russians. Some of them claim to be volunteers. They take off their insignias, or they sign a temporary leave slip so that they are ostensibly on vacation. But this is a Russian military occupation of part of a sovereign country. 600 Ukrainians have died in the first 6 months of this year. This is not something we can simply acquiesce to and pretend that we can go back to partnership with Russia. But what we are doing on the defense side is proportionate. It's defensive. It's very modest in scope. Four battalions is not an invasion force that's going to threaten Russia. Our exercises that have recently been controversial, 31,000 troops in Poland earlier this month. In February, Russia did an exercise with 88,000 troops. They've done others with 20,000, 30,000, 60,000. Last year, they did one with 160,000. And they don't give us any advance notice. So we have to deal with the world as it is. But the other point isn't the internal security and illegal migration, refugees, isn't that more of a concern? I think for each country, the balance may be different. But we're trying to be responsive to all of these concerns. We're not just Russo-centric. Deterrence and defense is one theme, but this one I was describing, projecting stability, is the other main theme. Doing a serious job about the threats from the southern direction is as important as dealing with the threats from the eastern direction.
Now, NATO doesn't have all the answers to these things, but we are contributing to the EU's efforts to control illegal human trafficking with our maritime mission in the Aegean, and we might do the same in the Central Mediterranean. Building the capacity of our Middle Eastern partners can help them control the migration at the source. That would be the best solution of all, so the people don't feel pressed to get on those boats in the first place. So NATO will contribute, but there's a lot of work to be done by individual European countries, by the European Union. NATO doesn't have all the answers, but it will provide answers when it has the capability. So this will be a challenge, because I know countries who live farther away from Russia don't see the threat as immediate as the Latvians, the Lithuanians, or the Estonians, or the Poles. But what NATO only works when we take everyone's concerns into account. I think we're doing just that in our agenda for the Warsaw Summit, and we just need to keep doing that so that Portugal and Poland equally see that their security is being strengthened through their participation in NATO. Now, can we cooperate with Russia against terrorism? I would say the answer is maybe. I certainly hope so. It should be an area where our interests continue to coincide. But we've seen in the last 6 months that Russia has maybe a similar but not identical agenda. Their intervention in Syria was much more about propping up the regime of President Assad, who, of course, is responsible for the mass murder of hundreds of thousands of his own people and created the chaos and instability that provided the soil in which the Islamic State was able to grow. So suddenly to say that President Assad is part of the solution rather than part of the problem makes it difficult to fully align our positions with Russia. But in recent months, there's been some progress through very patient diplomacy by the U.S. Secretary of State to try to get the diplomatic process going so that we can end the war in Syria, which is what we all need to see happen, which would end the pressures that lead to mass migration and continued suffering of the Syrian people. And Russia has been focusing more of its military actions against Daesh and not so much against the moderate opposition. But it's a very complex picture. And so we have to test this, the possibility of cooperating with Russia. It's not automatically going to be something easy to do. But what we can't do is get back into the practical cooperation that we conducted with Russia before the annexation of Crimea. I mean, some of those issues involved mutual benefits. I don't deny that. But when a country is violating all the rules of European security, it's hard to have business as usual. They need to implement the Minsk agreements, get their forces out of eastern Ukraine, and implement the ceasefire and all the political arrangements under the Minsk agreement. Then we can begin to discuss a step-by-step process back to at least limited cooperation with Russia. On the last questions, a lot of different things were raised. Of course, values are indeed what provide the solid foundation of the alliance, and those values are not just something we advocate on the part of for other states to abide by. We set a very strict standard for democracy, rule of law, before we take in new members to the alliance. But we do have to hold our own members to those same standards. And this is true within the European Union, and it's true within NATO. So that's not necessarily something that's easy to engage in when you're dealing with major external threats, but it is ultimately important for the long-term unity of the alliance that when we see a departure from our values, whether it's on the part of old members or new members, that we speak out or at least speak firmly, maybe more privately than publicly, but we definitely have to take these issues into account. Now, I addressed the question about the relationship with Russia, I think to some extent already. Again, I would protest that our rhetoric is not reminiscent of the Cold War. We're trying to be the mature partner in this relationship and de-escalate, promote more predictability, more transparency. We are very scrupulous when we do military exercises to provide all the information months and months in advance, to invite Russia and others to send observers, and to show that we are doing only legitimate defensive preparations and nothing that could be described as escalatory. Russia does the opposite. They don't notify any of their exercises, even one that they did 3 years ago called Zapad 2013. It's a big exercise in the West. They claimed it had under 13,000 troops so that they could avoid the requirement to notify, which is exercises bigger than 13,000 troops. But then a few days later, they tell all the military attachés in Moscow that it has 88,000 troops. So that's not a basis for building trust and predictability, but that's what we will try to do. That's why we want to use the NATO-Russia Council, is to manage an unstable relationship and try to make it more stable and predictable. That is sort of the minimum. We might be able to cooperate down the road, but first we need to restore more stability and predictability. On Brexit, well, we'll see what happens at the end of the day. The vote is already underway, so all I can say is we have to respect the ultimate decision of the British people. NATO will not necessarily be directly affected. UK is, of course, probably the second most powerful member of NATO in military terms and a very active participant in everything that we do. And that won't be changed, even if the Brexit forces prevail. But my boss has said repeatedly, Secretary General Stoltenberg has said that a strong UK and a strong European Union is good for NATO and it's good for security in Europe. So to the extent that there's a risk of new divisions and disunity, that could over time have some of a corrosive effect on NATO. So I hope that we won't be in that scenario this time tomorrow, but NATO will manage, but it's not necessarily good for European security.
Thank you very much. E agora então daria a palavra.
No, give the floor to. I would like to know if other people want to take the floor. And give the floor to Augusto Correia, member of Eurodefense. Good morning. Thank you for the presentations. I would like to ask a question on cooperation and cooperation between NATO and the European Union, since NATO has become a global organization of crisis management, and especially in North Africa, where the European Union is involved in activities in this area. What is the cooperation existing between NATO and the European Union in this area to avoid duplications? And this is my first question. There's another issue which was not mentioned. This NATO-EU cooperation is also important in the development of capacities, considering that it is necessary to spend more and spend better. I think that cooperation in this area is a very important factor. And concerning the NATO-Russia relation, relations. I read recently that NATO is considering the using AWACS means to support a multinational force. And I would like to ask whether this intervention could be understood by Russia as a threat, and if consequently there might be any danger of an escalade in this area. I have all recently read that in an exercise being now conducted in Poland, that representatives from Belarus and Russia were invited. Does it mean improving of the relationship? Is it already a consequence of the last NATO-Russia Council? I have another question from Mr. João Rocha Pereira. My name is Rocha Pereira. Good morning to you all. I would like to thank the President of the committee for inviting me. I would like to greet the Vice President, Ambassador Felshaw, the Secretary of State, and all those present. Now, one of my present concerns as an international security consultant is the resolution of international conflicts and the psychology of peace. This was the topic of my PhD thesis. We all know that there has the high flow of refugees which we are received in Europe, of people coming here from war zones and from countries in war, which are about 28. Some have a terrible war in Syria. Other countries have a moderate war. There are also deep conflicts which push these refugees to Europe. We should intervene more in the origin of these conflicts. In these countries which have a conflictus social situation, which provoke wars and such conflicts, I would like to know whether NATO is considering investing more in the Pacific resolution of international conflicts, so that when there are symptoms or signs of a possible conflict, of making a more qualified intervention in order to sort out these conflicts, or to, in fact, to solve them in anticipation, in order to avoid so many deaths, so much trafficking of human beings that we know are derived from these conflicts. And I would like to give the floor also of another Member of Parliament, former Defence Ministry, Mr. Branco. Thank you, Mr. President. I have a very quick question based on my experience of the last 4 years. NATO has a very strong capacity of response, of reaction. It's going to increase in budgetary terms. It's a financial capacity. I would like to know whether the level of political readiness are equal to those of military readiness. If not, how can we reach this? There are three sets of questions, and I'll give the floor to Ambassador Felshaw.
Thanks very much. Portuguese are clearly the masters of the three-part questions. On the first set of questions, cooperation between NATO and the EU is not easy because of political issues that you are familiar with. The fact that Cyprus is a member of the European Union, and we still don't have a political settlement to reunify the island. And then, of course, Turkey being a member of NATO and not of the EU. So this creates some political obstacles to when you have one country that's not recognized, one EU country that's not recognized by one NATO country. So we have to work somewhat more indirectly, but we've done a lot. Our staffs increasingly engage with their counterparts at the European External Action Service on a continuing basis so that we can avoid duplication. We can better understand what each of us is doing, whether it's in Ukraine or Moldova, but also to think of ways we could complement each other, because NATO and the EU have different toolkits. There's a little bit of overlap, but for the most part, the EU's strengths are in economic development, rule of law, police training, human rights, encouraging sort of the political and economic reforms that countries need to undertake, whether they're in Europe or in North Africa. And NATO is more expert at defense and security sector reform, military training, counterterrorism. So there's a natural symbiosis that we hopefully can develop. The last few months, without exaggerating, have seen more progress than we've seen in more than a decade. We now have much more regular operational connections to the Commission as part of the coordination for the Aegean operation that's aiming at controlling illegal migration. And this could now expand to the Central Mediterranean. This whole phenomenon called hybrid warfare has led to close consultations aimed at what we're trying to produce as a compatible playbooks or protocols on how to prevent and defend against hybrid attacks. And again, each of us has different tools relating to cybersecurity, countering disinformation, protecting energy infrastructure, sharing intelligence. Working together, we can have a much more comprehensive response to hybrid warfare, and we hope that we can announce this at the Warsaw Summit. The actual cooperation will be kind of virtual. Each institution will take its own decisions, but by coordinating, there will be kind of an interlocking strategy. And maybe someday when the Cyprus problem is solved, we can do things in a more straightforward way. But we're doing a lot, and the potential is quite substantial. Development of capabilities, defense capabilities, is something we've actually been striving for many years. We have a NATO-EU capability group, but its effectiveness has been limited by those political problems I mentioned at the beginning. But we clearly need to avoid wasteful duplication and ensure that nations are under, you know, every incentive in the EU context and in the NATO context to provide the missing capabilities. And both NATO and the EU need the same things. We need more intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. We need aerial refueling tankers. We need command and control. We need cyber secure communication systems. So there's a lot of things that the European Defense Agency and our International Secretariat try to coordinate in the hopes of getting more capabilities and also encouraging multinational projects and collaboration, what we call smart defense and what the EU calls pooling and sharing, but it's very much the same thing. Third question on AWACS support hasn't been decided yet, but I think there, as I mentioned in my remarks, there's a good likelihood that NATO will agree to that some of its AWACS planes can support the coalition. It will likely involve flights in Turkish or international airspace rather than inside Syria or Iraq. So I think the potential for frictions with Russia is relatively small. They complain about everything NATO does, so there may be some rhetorical comments from the Russians. But I think this is manageable, and it will, I think, provide valuable support for the coalition air operations, because the national AWACS capabilities are stretched to the limit. The exercise in Poland, we invited Russia to send observers for the whole exercise, and they declined, maybe because they never invite us to their exercises. They felt embarrassed or that they might be creating a precedent. But they did use their right to send inspectors at their own initiative, and they were welcomed and given a full access and briefings on what was going on in the exercise. There were some from Belarus as well. I wouldn't say this is a sign of improvement in the relationship, but I think it does confirm that NATO has nothing to hide. We're very transparent, and we hope the Russians will follow our example, and this becomes more of a normal thing and not an exceptional thing. Let's see, where's page two? Conflict resolution. It is indeed something we attach great importance to. Certainly preventive action, proactive diplomacy, is if it works, can save many lives, prevent mass migration by refugees, and avoid the need to engage in much more costly military intervention to put out the fire. So we all have a shared interest in peaceful resolution of disputes. NATO has, I think, recognized that its capacity to do this may be limited, and it would duplicate the capacities of the United Nations, of the OSCE, and of our individual member states who have active diplomatic profiles. So in terms of where we invest our resources, it's not been seen as something that we can afford to set up our own kind of a European External Action Service to go out there and try to mediate conflicts. We did a little bit of this, however, during the 90s in the former Yugoslavia, but these days we delegate the diplomacy to other institutions. But we try to coordinate more with them, and we've just set up a new full-time liaison officer to the OSCE to try to improve sort of interaction with them and with the NATO representatives in Vienna. We have a liaison officer in New York for the United Nations, so that's a somewhat more indirect approach. So I may disappoint you, but I think we're doing as much as we can. The question from the former minister. Our political readiness, I think you mean by that our decision-making capabilities, I think we're improving them. Among the decisions that we took at the Wales Summit last year was that we needed to accelerate decision-making in a crisis. We had to actually revise our procedures to allow for the possibility of skipping some of the stages of committee review or military committee review, giving the option to the council to get direct advice from the commanders within 24 hours rather than going through a lot of consultation, because in an era of cyber threats, hybrid warfare, and non-state actors who can completely overturn the international order as much as a state adversary, that we need to be much more responsive. We're also improving our warning system and sharing of intelligence. We're soon to decide on creating a senior post dedicated to coordinating and the sharing of intelligence within the alliance so that we have a more responsive political decision-making apparatus than we do now. But I can say, having participated in some of our exercises and simulations, that we're already getting better. And I think that we're using realistic scenarios in our exercises so that we confront ourselves with some of the dilemmas. Because NATO will never be as fast as an authoritarian adversary when only one person needs to be consulted. And that's our strength, that we're an alliance of democracies. But we're recognizing that there are some situations where you have to delegate certain freedom of maneuver to the military commanders to at least prepare the forces, to put them on a high state of alert. and not have five hours of meetings in Brussels to think about it. Because if you get behind, everything could be lost. And I would add, and it goes back to one of the earlier questions, that I think allies recognize that as much as we wish we were in a more harmonious relationship with Russia and building a partnership, and that's still our long-term goal, that we have to deal with the world as it is. And that's why I think we are seeing just about all allies beginning to move upward on defense spending. Next year we'll see a 1.5% increase across the alliance. And so even though there's a few countries that are lagging, not Portugal, Portugal's moving up. overall, I think there's a sense of responsibility that cuts across the whole alliance. And I think that's reinforced, however, by the point I made earlier, that you know, we're trying to be truly 360 degrees in our thinking, so that every nation, whether they live in the southwestern part of the alliance or the northeastern part of the alliance or anywhere else, is confident that NATO is listening to their concerns and that we have a strategy that is addressing those concerns. That's what makes NATO work, and I'm proud to have been involved as the Deputy Secretary General for more than 4 years. I'll be leaving later this year. But I think that spirit of solidarity is NATO's greatest strength, and it's still as strong as ever.
Não há mais inscrições.
No further inscriptions. We are getting near the coffee break. I would like to use this opportunity once again to thank Ambassador Feshbo for his presence and for his very interesting presentation. When he answered questions, he mentioned two or three points that I would like to underline, not only the solidarity, but also cohesion within the Atlantic Alliance, and also credibility, solidarity, cohesion, and credibility. These are the main references in such a complex time on the international scene. Someone has mentioned the Brexit. If everything goes well today, it won't be a problem, but if it doesn't go so well, we'll have to take Brexit into account in the next Warsaw Summit. Once again, thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, dear members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to break for 10 minutes. Then we'll have a second panel, which has the participation of a representative who is also a Turkish member of parliament, Mr. Osman Faruk Logoglu, who we also have Mr. Michael Baranovsky, who is the director of the German Marshall Fund's Warsaw office. And here we have a Portuguese component, Mr. Vasconcelos, who recently was the director of security studies of the EU. He is very familiar with these issues. And finally, we're going to have General Luís Valença Pinto, the former Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces in Portugal, is become a professor at the Catholic University, but his comments will be very useful to us, not only because of his experience as a military, and also to his considerations on defense and security in Europe. Thank you again for your presence here. So we're going to break for 10 minutes. Thank you.